Welcome to Health Tech Central, the podcast that connects you with the wisdom of trailblazers at the intersection of health, care, and technology. 42-ish minutes of entertaining inspiration, actionable insights, and answers to just about everything. Hitchhiking, most definitely allowed. With your host, Mehdi Khaled.
Hello and welcome, everyone. We have a very dear friend of mine from Mexico. His name is Jesus Diaz. He has been the chief medical officer in many public and private healthcare institutions in Mexico. He's currently the chief information officer at Hospitales MAC, was a CIO of Secretaría de Salud, Minister of Health, IMSS, and recognized one of the top 50 most influential IT executives in Latin America by Hightech for several years now. He has implemented certainly significant technological advancements in healthcare in Mexico and elsewhere. Choi, qué alegría, welcome to the show. Thank you for being with me.
It's a good talking to you, Mehdi. By the way, I'm going to hire you as my PR guy from now on.
Glad to work for free with you, my friend, anytime.
No. It's great talking to you as always. And I'm very proud and honored to be on your show. I was looking forward to it for a time now.
Thank you, Choi. So tell me, obviously you're a busy man, but what are the things that really keep you up at night? What are the things that you want to push forward and get everybody on board with?
Well, it appears that no matter where I am, challenges are proving to be pretty much the same. And they're not technical, you know, as you would assume, or maybe you would imagine. It has to do with organizational culture and adoption and reacting to change accordingly and so on. And that's what's keeping me busy. What's keeping me busy is, you know, doing some, I would say, loving and doing some evangelization of technology throughout the company and throughout the different stakeholders and so on, and getting the budget for it. I mean, there's always that issue, that minor issue, but in the end, it's just trying to be contagious about what the technology can do for us in the future, right? And that's what's keeping me busy, and that has been keeping me busy for the past probably 15 years. At the very beginning, it was all technical issues, trying to be, you know, pioneer and trying to adopt this technology or that one and being the first one and so on. It was a rush. I loved that part of my life. It was great. It was a technical challenge. It was a very, I would say, very thoughtful challenge. But now my challenges are much more meaningful, Mehdi. You know, to be honest, I like them more. I like them more. Yeah. And I have been turning increasingly on the human side of adopting technology. And I like to think of myself as probably we have talked in the past, as someone who has a philosophy around adopting technology, right?
Okay, I'm going to trigger you with a question now. What do you think about AI in healthcare? And where do you think the domains of relevant applications of AI in healthcare are today?
Too many broken promises. It's a huge hype, Mehdi, just like everybody else. Just like elsewhere, right? Just like everywhere else, everybody's talking about hype. Every single vendor has some gadget to sell you or application to sell you that has AI embedded and so on. And there's this misunderstanding, I would think, of what AI means and what AI is and what AI is for and what really is in the end. Because in the end, AI is mathematical regression and prospections, and it's been done for thousands of years, back to the great mathematicians of the ancient Greeks and so on. And now you put that reasoning in a piece of code, and it's AI all of a sudden, right? And it's good. I like it, but you know what my perspective about it. I usually go slow when talking and when trying to adopt artificial intelligence. I've done it in the past, actually. Probably we talked in the past that there was this huge project in Mexico, in one of my previous lives with previous legs, I mean some of the places that I worked before, there was this huge project and that was very famous here in Mexico. Actually, won one of the prizes, award given to the most innovative company, which was a hospital. It was the chain of hospitals for the hospitals where I worked for, and we dealt with trying to predict post-chirurgical pain in patients, right? Doing this digital queen technology and neural networks and so on. And it was great. It was very on point. It's been used now for some patients in this healthcare system, but we're not still there. You know, we can work, we can find some specific point such as this one, which by the way, that project that I'm telling you about, it was developed by ourselves. It was not built or embedded in a piece of code or something that we bought from a vendor. It was something that a group of physicians from a hospital were working on. And in that very aspect, I truly believe there is innovation, and I truly believe that something can be achievable. But in other terms, such as mass adoption and going out and keep the story of or selling the story that there's technology widely available to save lives, I don't believe so. Mary, I don't believe so. I've actually been very apocalyptic about that, you know, being very outspoken of not believing everything you've been told, not even in the papers, not even on social media, not even in technology shows such as the ones we know and the ones we have been attending for years. And I've been trying to restrain myself, as you can see, because in other words, I just truly believe we're not there, right? One, I would say, I'm going to mention two that are very basic. Sometimes it's been taken for granted that they have been adopted and they're not. And the first one is through adoption of clinical guidelines, universal accepted clinical guidelines. If you give support to coming up, patient with aneurysm and the way of giving the opportunity to just with one click, run a whole protocol, you know, and rest assured that the patient is being taken accordingly. I think that's huge, and we should invest more on that and deploy throughout organizations and be, you know what, and this is very important, be standardized around that, right? That clinical guide should be widely adopted and widely accepted, right? So that it becomes a standard wherever you go. I would say that one. And the other one, I think that clinical decision support system. We've been talking for clinical decision support system for years, Mary. We talked about that in previous lives, you and I, probably 20 years ago. And I think that to this day, very meaningful and a little bit underrated. Again, taking for granted that every single EMR or piece of software or code, whatever it is that you're using, whatever you are, it's embedded and it's not. And I think that low-hanging fruit that should be available to everyone, democratized, so to say, and they're not. So let's go back to the basics. Of course, now, yes, there's some intelligence. I don't know if artificial, right? But there is some intelligence embedded in those tools. So let's use it accordingly, but not trying to predict the future with it yet.
Jesus, if you had a magic wand right now and you'd be given three wishes to accomplish in your digital health career and journey, what would they be? What would you do? What are the three things that you would wish to change right away?
Right off the bat, I would say change every stakeholder and everyone else mindset to put it on the same track. You know, like taking off whatever it is that is happening on their minds and their thoughts and whatever it is, and put everybody else in the same railway. And I mean railway in the best possible way, not in the AI railway, which means trying to force us to go in the same way. No, just put us in the correct mindset. It's really difficult doing that. It's really difficult. Technology is improving more everywhere, right? So it is dealing with people that it's difficult. I would say that's something blurry, I would say. The other one, and that's a difficult question. The other one is there's still some people that don't believe that technology can save lives. I would like to think that. And last but not least, make this available somehow for everyone, for every single, I mean, having everyone in the same mindset, trusting that technology can save lives, make that available for every single people on the planet. I mean, it's too wide to be, it's a huge dream, but I deal with that every single day. You know, I work for the public sector. So that last part, democratizing technology, being a great part of my life for the past 20 years, maybe.
Talking about democratizing healthcare and democratizing access to healthcare and to everybody, I'd like to take a step sideways again, maybe not back, but sideways, into the way AI has been or is being developed right now and brought to market. And we've seen the big and massive difference in, I would say, culture, not so much in funding, in funding as well, but I think I just published a paper a couple of days ago that is talking about it's actually the culture that is setting the pace of AI development and not so much the funding. Initially, it was the funding because it has started, if you wish, in China, but they have been doing it. The public sector in China has been doing it in a very subliminal way with cameras and facial recognition and everybody and giving points to citizens, etc. And that's their own thing. But then, now, from ChatGPT onwards, we've seen that, you know, we're putting technologies in the hands of handful of people, basically, with battery systems and black boxes, basically, versus now we've seen the couple of weeks ago, DeepSeek came out, Qwen 2.5 Max came out, HealthGPT came out a couple of days ago. And so, and all of these are open source, but to me, it has to do with the way and the culture of the East, which is basically you are an individual, but you are part of a society and a community. East Asians see themselves not as individuals, so it's not an individualistic culture, it's a Confucian culture, which basically means you are, first of all, you are part of a community, and then you are who you are. And so basically that open source thing is, to me, is a real telling moment because it matches very well. It aligns very well with the way Eastern cultures work. And because of that, you see very little of that in Western cultures because we are very much individualistic and we want to conquer the world. We want to dominate.
We want to monetize everything, even the air we breathe, right?
Jesus, you are in the private sector, and obviously the dynamics of the private sector and the public sector are different for many reasons, but also in terms of technology, mainly because of doctors in the private sector are not, or in the majority of cases, employees of the clinics. They are also customers. In the public sector, they are employees, and you can actually put them more into adopting technologies and get them more to start using computers and your software and have the adoption a little bit more up. What do you think about that? Do you see any difference between the public sector and the private sector in terms of technology adoption in your context?
Well, you described it very well, Mary. That's precisely the case. Physicians are freelancers in the private sector and they're employed in the public sector. But then again, the funding is not always prioritized towards the technology adoption and software adoption in the public sector. It is much more common in private sector. And in the private sector, again, management and technology adoption is a big issue, not so much when technology projects are incurred in the public sector, but it's not synchronized. Sometimes public sector starts adopting technology and private sector is not necessarily in the same way. You remember that in the past when we discussed it, we mentioned waves. In Mexico, digital technology or health technology adopted in waves. It comes every 5 or 6 years. All of a sudden, it's a buzz. Everybody wants to talk about interoperability, electronic medical records, AI, and so on. And then all of a sudden, just the wave, crest of the wave just goes back. Illness surrounding the sea, and nobody's talking about digital adoption in healthcare. And then all of a sudden, something happens. I'm not ready to pinpoint what it is as of yet, but I'm studying it. All of a sudden, 5 or 6 years, again, there comes another wave, and you better try to, you know, take advantage of leverage of that boss again to try to invest in technology. But it happens everywhere, not only in hospitals. I mean, in healthcare providers too. All of a sudden, you know, everybody's trying to push you something, electronic medical record, next generation electronic medical record monitor that have embedded AI and so on and blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden, stop. But it's not synchronized. Whatever it is, that it, the buzzword in the Western culture in Europe and probably in the States, it takes like 3 or 4 years to come down to Latin America. I mean, I'm not proud to say that, but I think it's a reality. So we're always like 3 to 5 years lagging or trailing behind the rest of the world because of that. This gap that I'm telling you, it's narrowing. If you remember last time we talked about that a few years ago, I said 10 years. It was the gap. Now it is, or the wave. Now it is, I think, 3 to 5 years. Eventually, I hope that we're going to be even with the rest of the world.
There's something you told me many, many years ago. And I remember we were having lunch at IMSS, Instituto Mexicano de Seguro Social. We were having lunch there in Mexico City, you and I. It was maybe 20 years ago. Easy. And you said something to me that stuck with me. And you said this: we are not lucky in Latin America because big multinationals and big tech companies and vendors do not invest in development in Latin America and in Mexico in particular. And therefore, the gap in adoption and the gap in getting things going under your skies is still there. Do you still stand by that statement? Is it still true for you?
That is still true. That is still true. Some leading companies such as Epic, we have tried many, many times, you know, even gathered together some of the top healthcare providers here in Mexico, such as Tecnológico Monterrey, Hospitales ABC, Christus Muguerza, and so on. Talk all, you know, as a whole private market and try to convince them to come down to Mexico and sell their product to us. They wouldn't want it. And they don't want to come down. They don't have the appetite somehow.
Epic is a very a very special beast. Epic is like Chuck Norris. You don't choose Epic, they choose you.
Just like that. Yeah. That unfortunately, true. And but the big companies, I mean, not the need companies or the specializing healthcare companies such as Microsoft and Google, AWS, and so on. They don't have experts on the subject matter deployed throughout Latin America. Sometimes, if you're lucky enough, some of them have a figure, person that oversees the whole market on healthcare. But here in Mexico, people that is trying to replicate or resonate whatever it is that company is doing on healthcare does not happen. I've been working for healthcare for many years. And to this day, I am lucky to be well-known in some circles, because I have a lot of friends such as you. But to this day, Mary, even that I've been working for almost 30 years in the healthcare IT, I've never been invited by one of these huge companies to a healthcare specific meeting to discuss the products or the company or what have you.
I would say there is an exception to that. There is an exception to the rule. The exception is what we've done 20 years ago in 2001 when we started Tec de Monterrey in American British Cordray Hospital in Mexico. What we've done there is still there, because what we said is we need to build the practice, and we built an SAP-based healthcare practice in Latin America, and today it is still there. We started building it, remember, with Massimo, with Matias Montes de Oca, with all the guys, and it's still
there. We were pioneers.
And it's still there. And that was a stepping stone. That was a foundation that we laid down, because we said we cannot be successful if we do not build a base and a practice.
And if you look after in the literature, there's a documented case on how Tec de Monterrey was the best that to implement the vertical of healthcare, the SAP vertical of healthcare ISH in its moment. So that's still there. That doesn't replicate often. I mean... Yeah. I mean, there are still not sterner implementations. That's another example in Mexico, probably not too many. I can think of probably two in Latin America.
Do you think the lack of these big players, the EMR players, Cerner and Epic and the guys, Do you think the lack of their existence under your skies led to local companies developing some sort of EMRs, etc., that are more competitive? Because need is the mother of all inventions.
There's a blossoming market for that right now in Mexico and probably Latin America, thanks to the lack of interest of those companies. And I would say thank you to those companies because they push the market to develop their own applications and solutions for the market. Because the market, again, probably in wait, but demand this sort of solutions. They're not listening, Mary. And I hope they listen to this podcast and it resonates with them. They're not trying hard enough. They're missing out a lot of things that are going throughout Latin America right now.
It's unfortunate. Something that I've seen in Hong Kong, but I have not seen elsewhere, is when they started developing their clinical management system. 25 years ago, they started with a lot of in-house development and involving all the doctors, and they developed the CMS-1. Now they are in the third version of CMS, clinical management system. 100% of physicians in the public sector uses it in Hong Kong. And what they've done is they actually took that version of CMS, stripped it down from some public health functions, and deployed it into the small practices in the private sector. So basically, there is somehow, it's almost an altruistic way to push for digitization and adoption, because it's the same application. People who work in the public and private sector, all of a sudden, they are used to the thing, so they don't have to get the same user interface, same look and feel, etc. And so it's something like this I would like to see. And maybe one day we'll come to that. But I think that that's for smaller jurisdictions. And when your resources are limited, maybe that's the way to do.
That's wishful thinking for big companies. That can actually be done, like in Denmark, right? And why I'm mentioning Denmark, because here in Mexico, there was this local joke that at some point our previous president mentioned that the healthcare system in the public sector system in Mexico was going to be pretty much or even better than Denmark, right? But let's not forget that Denmark has a population of what? 1, maybe 2 million people. We're 150, probably reaching out to 170 million people in Mexico. So having an acute, having very defined, homologized, standardized healthcare system when so fragmented here in Mexico, having the same tool. I mean, having a tool is wishful thinking. Having the same tool, just, you know, for now, not on our plan. For now, we look forward to be adopting tools, and maybe probably in the future, trying to think of one that would look the same to everyone. Which, by the way, now that you mention it, a few months ago, the head of the Social Security Mexican Institute mentioned that the electronic medical record that IMSS, Social Security, is using will be, he didn't use this word, but that's what he meant, would be enforced to all public security, big healthcare hospitals throughout the country. Does that sound something, ring a bell? Does that sound like something you've heard before?
Yep.
Man.
Well, good luck with that. So talking about that, we'll come to the last section of this, which is basically out of your wealth of experience and years of being on the battlefield, I would say, what would be, I'll start with that category.
I like that word, on the battlefield. And it's so exhausting to be on the battlefield, man. for a moment, I would just like to be a figure of, you know, like, goodwill and bringing hope to everyone and so on. But man, I've been battled down by physicians for many years in my life now. I'm sorry I interrupted you.
That's all right. That's absolutely okay. I'm very glad it resonates with you. So what I wanted to say is, if you have one advice to give to your politicians in Mexico for digitization, digital health, for adoption of technologies in healthcare, what would that advice be? Where to focus? What not to do?
Walk the aisles of the hospital, you know, the whole corridor. Go to emergency rooms, talk to the people and see what their needs are. And then afterwards, that should be enough by itself. But if given the script, then go to not the most modern private hospital, but a reasonable one. and then look up the difference and try to find in that gap what it is that with the resources that you have, you can bring down and democratize it for the rest of the people. I am sure there is something you'll find that can be used that should not be too difficult nor too expensive to bring down and use that technology for all the public sector hospitals.
Yeah.
I would say that, simply that, you know, walk down the corridors.
Just be pragmatic and be meaningful and being sticking to what your needs are and not to sticking to some political agenda.
And then if possible, that should be enough. But if not, if given a chance, have a point of reference or a benchmark. And say, if people had a magic wand and I wanted to turn this into something else, what would it be? And I'm not talking about, again, Denmark or Estonia or what have you, right? I mean, here in Mexico, to have a different hospital that a little bit more modern and use it both accordingly and try to find what it is that you can bring down and give it to the rest of the people.
Yeah.
That would be my advice.
That's a great one. And I hope they're listening or they will listen to you. The other one is, tell me.
I am my way of doing that. I'm not giving up that thought.
Good.
Or that plan in my life for now.
Advice for healthcare professionals who are basically your clients, but also your partners in delivering and adopting what you put under their eyes.
Put on the patient's shoes. It's a simple advice, but very powerful. And we have all been patients at some point. Just simply ask, had I been a patient or when I have been a patient, I would have liked to have this or that tool available for me or for my physician or for my nurse, internal, whatever. What would it be? And then build a plan around it.
Last one for enthusiasts who from a clinician's side want to venture into the digital health territory. Someone like me, I'm sure you've seen doctors, young doctors maybe, or younger doctors who want to become more involved in digital health and technology, everything related to technology in healthcare. What would your advice be there?
This is going to be apocalyptic. Don't be discouraged by all the light that you read and all the light that has been put, but just about everybody else, including vendors. Be very selective of who you talk to, what you read, and where you go. That would be my advice. And that would surely help in defining the Rosetta Stone that we're all looking for in healthcare.
Jesus, thank you so very much for being with me today. And nos vemos pronto.
This has been Health Tech Central. We hope you enjoyed the show. Please don't forget to subscribe on your preferred podcast channel and give us a rating or review. Finally, you can check out our news on healthtechcentral.io and inspire us with your feedback. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next exciting episode of Health Tech Central.